From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudet. January is National Human Trafficking Awareness and Prevention Month, and a group of people have gotten together to offer training in how to spot and prevent this crime from happening. However, one of the biggest obstacles officials have is convincing Idahoans that human trafficking happens here, which makes it even harder to get the public's help in stopping it. So here today to talk about this crime and why it hides beneath the surface for so many are Jeannie Strohmeyer, Executive Director of the Nampa Family Justice Center, Parler Bartholomew with Idaho Community Outreach Behavioral Services, and Taylor Cook, the Human Trafficking Project Coordinator for the Nampa Family Justice Center and a trauma therapist for Revitalized Counseling. I want to welcome all three of you to the program today.
Thank you.
Jeannie, can I start with you? And let's just begin with the basics. What is human trafficking, the legal definition of it?
I am going to just mention, and your name is Jenna, is that right?
Gemma.
I just want to mention first, if you wouldn't mind, because Paula and Taylor are the experts in this particular arena. At the Family Justice Center, we serve victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, child abuse, elder abuse, stalking, and human trafficking. So I would like to defer that question over to one of them to give you the most accurate answer.
Absolutely. So Paula or Taylor, who would like to explain what human trafficking is and the legal definition of it?
Yeah, so I will. So human trafficking, specifically sex trafficking, is when an individual actually benefits from somebody else's sexual encounter. So any kind of sexual activities or even labor in the labor arena, if they are benefiting off of somebody else's work financially, whether it's through drugs or food or any kind of needs that they're getting, then they've become trafficked.
So then, Paula, who are the victims in particular? Who do we see in Idaho?
So a victim can be anybody. There's no discrimination in the trafficking arena, unfortunately. Victims can be as young as infant children, which we've seen, and clear up until their 50s and 60s. I recently come in contact with a 61-year-old female in Idaho that has been a victim of trafficking. Either gender, males, females, they are just as much being trafficked as well as our LGBTQ population. Mm.
So Paula, how do traffickers solicit their victims?
There's so many different ways that a person can traffic or can solicit their trafficking victims. It can be everything from internet, from the cell phones, which is probably the most popular, to different public locations, bars, clubs, even our churches, our schools. We have a lot of kids that are being solicited and recruited out of the school systems.
So Taylor, you have worked with victims of human trafficking. Can you talk some about, in general terms, about some of the people that you have helped?
Yeah, so I will say that human trafficking victims and survivors are some of the most beautiful and resilient people, specifically resilient people I have ever met. These are individuals that are some of our most vulnerable in society. They are coming from what a trafficker does is they'll exploit a vulnerability. So these individuals might have come from an unhealthy home environment or been homeless or are immigrant adults and children, or like Paula already mentioned, our LGBTQ community. They are coming from a vulnerable situation and are being trafficked. And when they come out of the life, they are taking a journey toward healing. And they are some of the most resilient individuals facing some of the most extensive trauma that I've ever seen and overcoming that. And so they're incredible.
So before we dig specifically into Idaho, Taylor, I want to talk with you about what you've seen in regards to human trafficking on an international scale, because you spent some time in the Philippines. And I think that there is this idea that human trafficking only happens overseas, in particular in places like the Philippines.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of us have this idea that, like you mentioned, human trafficking only happens in a third world country, that it certainly doesn't happen here in the United States or even in our backyard here in Idaho. The reality is that human trafficking does have a different face, if you will, here in Idaho than it does in a third world country. From spending time in the Philippines, a lot of those women that I was working with over there were coming from very impoverished areas, and poverty was what ultimately led them into being trafficked. Here in Idaho, it does look a little bit different. Paula can speak to this as well, but familial trafficking is one of the most common forms of trafficking here in Idaho, meaning mom, dad, husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, brother, sister, you name it. That's the most common form of trafficking we see here. And so I think part of it is changing our perception from, many of us have seen the movie Taken and think that trafficking looks like getting kidnapped off the side of the street and then being sold somewhere in Europe or somewhere in Asia. And the reality is that's just not what it looks like here. Well, kidnapping can happen and does happen. That's definitely in the minority as far as how victims are solicited to be trafficked.
So Paula, can we talk a little bit about Idaho? And as Taylor just mentioned, familial trafficking, I've never heard that term before. Can you explain it a little bit more and what that looks like and how we see that here in our state?
Absolutely. And that's probably why the familial trafficking arena is probably why it is so hard to identify in Idaho. We're selling our own children. We're selling our own significant others. We're selling our own siblings. And it can be to anybody. We all, you know, we look around at people around us and we all fit the profile of being a trafficker on the outside, as well as the buyers. But that's probably where the most part, like Taylor said, it's by far the highest population in Idaho is familial. And I think it's because there's really no statistics right now in Idaho about familial trafficking versus any type of trafficking. And so we get those numbers because we actually directly work with victims and have worked with victims for many years.
And when you say familial trafficking, Paula, is that normally of a sexual nature, or is it, what does that, I guess, look like?
Okay. So it can be both. Actually, it's both sex trafficking and labor trafficking. So just if I am a single mom and I have a child and I'm, you know, under the state requirement for being able to accept state assistance, sometimes I might just sell my child, whether it's for sex or for labor. We're seeing more and more labor as we become more educated in this area. We're able to identify more of the labor trafficking that's mixed in with the with the sex trafficking. Sometimes it's standalone, but usually it goes together. And so I'm giving my child up to somebody else to have sex with, and then I'm getting the financial benefit.
And you, Paula, you mentioned you do have some statistics for Idaho. So what kind of hard data do you have about trafficking?
So the hard data that I actually have is we actually work with anywhere from 4 to 6 new victims a week. We have contact with them.
Wow.
And we have two of the only Idaho safe houses in Idaho. And since we opened 2 years ago in December of 2020, we've actually housed 52 women.
Is it difficult to track human trafficking? Because I would think maybe it's misidentified sometimes as other crimes. Is that a fair assessment?
Oh, 100%. And actually even 95% of the women and men, boys and girls that we work with don't identify themselves as victims. It's through the education that we provide for them that they really start to become aware of the trafficking that's happening inside of there. It's a daily educational process that we go through with all of the survivors and the victims. We have survivors we work with, and they just still struggle to understand and identify themselves as a survivor of sex trafficking. And so when you look at the whole community as a whole, and then you go state, really, it's just so underdiagnosed and underseen. And it's because of the lack of education.
I would just add to that part
Go ahead, Taylor.
Sorry about that. I would just add to that part of Part of it too is I think we're misidentifying it. So we're seeing these victims and we're seeing them in our emergency rooms in the hospital and we're seeing them in our substance abuse treatment centers and we're treating that surface level issue. So we're treating the drug addiction or we're treating the pregnancy or we're treating the STI, you name it. And we're identifying that initial issue, but then we're not digging deep enough or don't know how to ask the right questions to be able to identify the trafficking component. So it's not even necessarily that we're not seeing these individuals. We are seeing them. We're just treating them for that surface level issue and not properly identifying these victims as trafficking victims.
And before we go any further, I do want to give out some phone numbers right now. Victims can call the Idaho Cops Crisis Hotline. That number is 208-803-1695. You can also call the Idaho Anti-Trafficking Coalition Crisis Hotline. That number, 208-630-6601. And you can text 233-733, which is Be Free. And I'll give those numbers again at the end of the segment, and we will also put them on our website, BoiseStatePublicRadio.org. So, Jeannie, one of the things that you have said is that education is half the battle and that you run into many people who just do not believe that human trafficking happens here in Idaho. Why is it so hard to believe that this happens here in this state?
Well, I think that we often are looking at the big cities and say, oh, yeah, that's normalized and that makes sense. It happened there. So many people, so many bad people, so many bad things happening, so much crime happening. But when we look here in Idaho, we're like, this is a great place to live. It's a beautiful place and a safe place. And it is in many respects. So people don't know that that's happening here because of those reasons. And it's not really in your face. We don't talk about it much. And I will tell you, probably not too long ago, a few years ago, we didn't know what was going on at the Family Justice Center. This was not part of the population we were serving because we did not know this was happening to the degree it is. And once we became educated and started learning about this, we said we have got to get into this fight and we have got to start doing something. So we pursued a grant in 2021 and received that federal grant. And we were able to hire Taylor because we saw that this was really a significant problem in our community. And so I really do understand why people think that might not be happening here, but we want to share it really loud and clear that this is happening, as Paula mentioned, 4 to 6 times. That's just her agency that's seeing 4 to 6 times a week a victim. And so it is happening and it's pervasive in our community. So we've got to be aware and ring the bells. And the other thing I want to mention is the accountability. So what's happening, and what I think about often, is that if people don't know what's happening, we don't really maybe do anything. They're not seeing prosecution happening on this front because the laws of that we have in place aren't sufficient for the prosecution to happen. So people are not aware it's happening for that reason as well. And so what we know is if we don't do something about it and we don't have accountability to those buyers and offenders and traffickers, this will be the place that people say, hey, come to Idaho, because they are not holding anybody accountable and it's just going to grow. So we are standing here saying we've got to stop it. We've got to do something. And that's what this is all about. So thank you for letting us share and talk about this on your show today.
Well, it's so important to talk about, right? And because it is something that I think so many of us are not aware of, or we don't know how prevalent it is. And with that said, Taylor or Paula, who would like to answer this? I'd like to know what some red flags are that people should be watching out for in regards to human trafficking.
So I'll hit on a few and then Taylor jump in at any time. I'm sure I will miss some. So one of the things that I think it's really important for people to understand is it is happening in every single hotel in our Treasure Valley. Everything from the very small motel to some of the upper level ones. And the reason that we know is because we have women and girls that call us from those hotels when they're actively working, because we actively work with women who are actively working because they still need fed, they need house, they need clothing and stuff. So, but some of the things that we look at is who's coming in and out of those hotels, and where, what's their clothing look like, and what are, like Taylor touched on some of the vulnerabilities. There's a lot of substance use and there's a lot of physical and sexual abuse. Some of those things in school settings, you know, we go into school settings and we educate teachers and staff to start identifying some of that. Some of these kids that aren't doing so well, that are left alone, that these upper older kids and adults that are coming and having relationships, watch who your kids have relationships with, because that's very significant. Watch the money that's coming in and out, because a lot of times our traffickers, in order to groom some of these younger boys and girls, they will buy them significant amounts of material things to just kind of pull them in and build that rapport. But I think first and foremost is watch who your people have rapport and relationships with as well. Watch the overworking, the over all night stuff during the day. If your kids are coming up missing during the day, but yet they're coming in at night, find out where they are, because a lot of this stuff is happening during the day.
Taylor, what would you add to that?
Yeah, I would say that it might look different for juveniles versus adults. So if we look at school-aged teenagers or even younger than that, are they, what's their attendance like? Are they missing school? Are they frequently tardy? Do they all of a sudden have a different group of friends or kind of running with a different crowd? Are they sharing information with significantly older people online, or do they have a significantly older boyfriend or girlfriend? I know that when we do education in the high schools, it's wild what some of these teenagers have knowledge of, even when it comes to online apps and social media and who they're sharing their information with. And like I mentioned, you know, older boyfriends and girlfriends. Some of the warning signs can overlap with like child abuse and domestic violence. So they can be mental health symptoms like depression or paranoia or being overly anxious. One thing I would be asking is, you know, are they in control of their own documents? Do they have their own ID? Do they have their own passport? Where are they living? What's their job situation? Are they in a job that just appears to be kind of too good to be true? Who's keeping all of the records of employment and of their finances? Again, I think it's asking question upon question, because some of these situations are really, really complicated. And so we can't just ask, are you a victim of sex trafficking or are you a victim of labor trafficking? Because number one, they're probably just going to look at you, or they're just going to deny and say no. So we have to be able to identify some of these other areas that make them vulnerable and be able to ask the right questions to gather more information.
Absolutely. Yes. No, go ahead.
So one thing that's really, really important in our area, because we know that we have such an opiate epidemic right now, and we have the substance variety is so large, and we really need to look at that as one of the red flags, because if somebody has a substance addiction and they have no way to pay it, so there's going to be a trafficker that's going to be waiting and watching. And it doesn't matter if our kids are 10 years old or, you know, 55 years old, there's going to be a trafficker that's going to watch, that's going to look for that one person that has a vulnerable addiction. And that's going to be a very easy way for them to get their fix. And we are seeing that more and more with the victims that we're coming in contact with, is where it started because they just had an addiction to, whether it was methamphetamine, you know, fentanyl is a huge thing in our streets right now. Any kind of substance, even alcohol, they will trade that for a fix every time. And somebody's benefiting from that. There's that third party trafficker. And so I think in our area, that's a big, big area we need to look at.
And there's a training coming up, correct, for people who want to find out more about human trafficking and how to help. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Yeah, so we actually, Idaho COMS is having a training tonight at the Good News Church in Nampa from 6 to 8 p.m. And it's open. It's just being held at a church. But it's open to the whole community, and it's a great way for families, family members, people in employment, just to come and look at it and listen, and we're able to share that. And I know Taylor has another trafficking training coming up next week.
Yeah. And then the Nampa Family Justice Center is hosting a training next Thursday, the 26th at the Nampa Police Department from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. And so you can register for that through the Nampa Family Justice Center. And Idaho COBS and the Nampa Family Justice Center, these are two trainings, but we are regularly hosting trainings for community members and also other professionals. So if there is a desire to learn more, connect with one of us because we'd be happy to plug you in or share more information about any upcoming trainings as well.
And before I let all of you go, Taylor, what kind of help and support do victims need right now?
Basic needs is a huge one. Housing, support with food, clothing, transportation assistance. Like we mentioned a little bit earlier, there are a couple local non-governmental organizations, Idaho COBS that Paula runs being one of those, and then the Idaho Anti-Trafficking Coalition. Through our grant, our Nampa Family Justice Center is also able to provide basic services to victims, but it usually starts with basic needs and then moves beyond that to mental health counseling, therapy, group therapy, employment assistance, resume building, education, you name it. It's helping these individuals start on a new path. And that usually starts from ground zero.
Well, thank you for all the work that you are all doing to help these victims, but to also bring this to the forefront. We've been talking with Jeannie Strohmeyer, Executive Director of the Nampa Family Justice Center, Paula Bartholomew with Idaho Community Outreach Behavioral Services, and Taylor Cook, the Human Trafficking Project Coordinator for the Nampa Family Justice Center, as well as a trauma therapist for Revitalized Counseling. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And remember, a week from Thursday, the Nampa Family Justice Center will be hosting a training for community members. It will be at the Nampa Police Department. We will put a link on our website, boisestatepublicradio.org. Here are those phone numbers again. Victims can call if they need help. You can call 208-803-1695, or you can call 208-630-6601. That is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And you can text 233-733. And we will put those numbers on our website, boisestatepublicradio.org. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
This new year, LifeKit wants to help you succeed. Because everyone needs a little help being human.
It can seem so overwhelming. You're not alone.
Who can I commit to being?
If you want to do something, then just do it. Just take that first step.
Great advice every week. Listen to Life Kit from NPR.